All right, everyone. It's been a while, and we're gonna try and do another podcast. Although we might be a little rusty at how this works, and clearly the getting started part is tougher than it used to be. So, this is Matthew, and the other person who will talk shortly is Jeff.
This is Jeff.
That's Jeff. This is me,
You can
Matthew.
usually tell it's Jeff because I chuckle when I talk because I enjoy life so much.
And he just ingested a lot of helium.
No.
Yes.
No,
Shut up.
that's stupid.
Or laughing gas.
That's your opening joke? That's retarded.
That's not a joke.
Oh, I did not have helium. This is an incorrect fact.
Oh, your
You know
voice sounded
who
really
is on the
high there
way
for a
up
second.
after ingesting helium is the Mariners offense after
Woo!
trading for Russell Branion. Hoo-wee! I forgot I could
Yeah.
do that once. So Russell Branion is back, and as I think, as soon as I got this text when I
Theoretically,
was
since
out,
he hasn't
I got
actually
this
played
text
yet.
like, the Mariners are getting guys now, and I thought, wait, what are you talking about? Russell Branion. And my instant thought, and I haven't had this thought a lot with this front office, was, well, that's stupid. Why would they trade for Russell Branion? And then I asked Matthew, and he has this 2011 option, which makes it more palatable because he could come back. And then I read Zirenzik's explanation where it's like, well, we have to make these players see what winning is like, which also has a value which you never really think about. And I don't remember, Matthew, if you were ever wrote about this, but I remember during the offseason, the Pirates brought in some veterans, and people were like, well, why would the Pirates bring in veterans? They're not going to go anywhere. And one of the arguments against it was, well, you know, even bad teams and mediocre teams need to win some extra games because it makes it more watchable, less hopeless. Maybe it's a good influence on the players. And it's one of those things that you don't ever really think about. You write it off, and then you see a team do it, a smart team, because I think we are still a smart team. Then you think, well, maybe.
Wouldn't that be an argument for it, not against it?
Yeah, now I'm arguing for it. I
Right.
completely switched. My initial reaction then mellowed quickly and reversed itself to the point where I'm not decisively in favor of it, but I don't think it's stupid. I just think it's, eh, let's see. Because who's going to miss Diaz or Carrera, really?
Well, given our track record in history, probably us.
I wonder which one. Hey, they do need a new shortstop since their ex-Mariner shortstop has a broken arm.
Yeah, we saw that one coming.
Yeah,
Joke's on you, Cleveland.
and Q's gonna have to go to war. Man, we own them some good.
Burn.
You have one guy in AAA, one guy with a broken arm, and one guy who's been drafted. Suck it. We got an ESPN studio host and a guitarist.
Also, we don't live in Cleveland.
Yeah, well, I was just watching a Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives yesterday. Or maybe it was Man vs. Food, something in Cleveland. And they have some, well, I wouldn't say it's good food, but food that looks like it tastes really good. I could stand to maybe spend a day there and then go to a doctor somewhere else.
I've heard it's really depressing from the one person I know who lived in Ohio.
I've heard it's really depressing from that one YouTube.
That sounded really upbeat, though. And there were two.
What were we talking about? Russell
I've
Branion.
heard at least it's not Detroit.
Yeah, but Detroit has the upside of buying property. And
Property you
bears.
want?
If there's a bear on your property when you buy it, do you get the bear?
I think so. Wait, what kind of bear?
Like a bear on four legs, mean, roars.
Oh, so not like a gay man.
Oh, no, I Matthew, we do not purchase and sell gay men in this country,
Well,
even
that's
not in
why
Detroit.
I was confused because I thought that's really homophobic, Jeff.
No, here we
And for
purchase and feed
you.
bears, wild bears.
Oh, for their meat?
No, just for their awesomeness. Russell Branion is a Mariner, and I think the thing, I don't know what the first thing about Juan Diaz actually, maybe this is embarrassing since I cover the team all the time, but I had never actually heard of him when we traded him.
Wait, who?
Juan Diaz.
Oh, well, he's also kind of generic name guy.
Yeah. Not to be racially insensitive, but it's true. They all kind of blend together. And he didn't do anything to really, I mean, whatever. He hit in high desert a little. It doesn't matter. Carrera, I've been more in favor of. I don't like just throwing him away. I wouldn't just lose him for no reason. I think I like his skill set a little bit as a useful player, but then it's the thing, like, you look at a guy like Carrera or even like a younger Ryan Langerhans and you think, well, what's their upside? League average outfielder. Okay.
Their upside is Ryan Langerhans.
Yeah. Like, it's good to have them in your system, and it's valuable to have a good, young, athletic, versatile outfielder who can play a bunch of positions and he's cheap for a bunch of years. Those are good players, but you can find them for a very low price. It's not replacement level. You still have to trade someone like, I don't know, Mike Morris to get them, but
yeah,
they're just so easy to get. But Carrera, his upside is extraordinarily low. Like,
right, and his upside was also limited by, you know, the situation in Seattle where we have Goody for the next 4 years, we have Ichiro for the next at least three, and the rate he's going, I don't think he's going to up and retire at the end of his contract, and unless he suddenly, you know, decides to leave, he's probably staying around for the foreseeable or unforeseeable future. Mm-hmm. And we have Michael Saunders, who, you know, Michael Saunders may not work out, but it's going to be a certain amount of time before Ezequiel Carrera would overtake Michael Saunders as our left field option.
Yeah.
So
it would be, I think, really easy for skeptics, pessimists, and fans of the six-org meme to look at this trade and be like, oh, there go the Mariners trading young players for veterans when they should be trading veterans for young players. But it's not that the Mariners need young players. They need young, close to the majors, high-level talent, which is what they lack. And Carrera was never going to be that. Diaz was almost certainly never going to be that. So it's, you never want to take that simplistic of an approach to a trade, because
I would simplify it further and say what the Mariners need are good players.
Yeah,
and neither Diaz nor Carrera had much of a shot of being a good player.
Yeah, I mean, Carrera. What's Carrera's ultimate upside? Ultimate upside is what, Michael Bourne, who's okay, but mostly because he runs the bases really well.
Yeah, I think that's about where I would put it, because he's got no power, and it's not like everybody's saying like, oh, well, he'll develop power. It's like, no.
Never. So we gave away two players who are young. That's their big thing, and we got one player who is old. But did the Mariners really – if the Mariners didn't come out behind on this trade, then it's not a stupid trade or a bad trade. It might be kind of a seemingly meaningless trade, but it doesn't make it bad. And, well, I'll let you talk about Brandon a little bit because you put up the post.
Yeah. Oh, wait, about Brandon?
Yeah.
Oh. Sorry, I zoned out there for exactly like 2 seconds, and apparently that was enough to make me lose all track of time. What about Russell Brandon?
So we traded for Russell Brandon. Let's talk a little bit about why. I think everybody...
Oh, about why. Yeah. Well, you kind of brought it up. I mean, if we could try to analyze this from our perspective, or we could try and rely on what Zarenczyk said, and that, you know, trying to instill some sort of winning on this team matters. I think that's a reasonable stance to take. A lot of people, I think, are too quick to be dismissive about the season once it's over, or mathematically unlikely to result in the playoffs, and that's not a position that a respectable front office person can take. It's kind of like related to the people who want managers to yank a guy from a batting order or starting position or a bullpen role after two poor outings or something like that. It's just like, you know, managers can't be that reactive. They can't make changes as fast as we want them to, because we can look at the numbers and be like, okay, this guy needs to be in this role and you're using this person suboptimally or whatever. But the managers are the ones who have to deal with the egos of these players and keep that all in check. And while we mentioned how chemistry doesn't, or we get pigeonholed as saying like chemistry doesn't matter or something like that. And that's not true. That's never what we're saying. What we do say is that, you know, clubhouse chemistry can certainly matter. We just can't predict it. And if you can't predict it, then it's not worth, you know, paying for it when you're trying to assemble a team. And I think there's no better proof of that than the 09 Mariners versus the 2010 Mariners that comprised a lot of the same people, and it comprised the same people that were lauded for their clubhouse chemistry, and the team fell apart. You can't predict what happens, and more than anything, winning breeds good chemistry. But what we can say, I don't think there's going to be any complaint that bad chemistry in the clubhouse can certainly negatively affect results. And if a manager loses or, you know, ends up with a malcontent in the clubhouse because he's shuffling around roles and nobody can get comfortable and nobody has confidence that, you know, if a player is like, well, if I go 0 for 4, I'm not going to start ever again, that's he starts, you know, putting a lot of pressure on himself, like, well, you know, and they start doubting themselves. And if there's one thing you can't do at that level, it's doubt yourself, for better or worse, as much as we would sometimes like them to. It's a tough position for managers. And so related to that, you know, general managers can't give up on a season in May just because it looks like they're not going to make the playoffs, because, well, they still have to play the rest of the games and they still have to figure out a way to get people to come to see the rest of those games. That affects their bottom line, and ultimately general managers are answerable to the owners. And you can as a general manager, you can point to how, you know, well stacked the team is for 3 years down the line, but if you drew a million fans to the stadium, that's going to be tough. It's going to take a very understanding owner.
Yeah, so I think related to Brannion, we know the team recently had that team meeting. It's been lacking a little leadership, and the neat thing about Brannion is that he's so familiar, so he's kind of a trade acquisition who can literally step right in and kind of become a leader again, which is something that is rare to come across in a league. And so he can, I mean, especially with Lee seemingly on the way out and Bradley struggling so bad, and Figgins is kind of stepping up, but I don't think Sean Figgins is the sort to actually lead a clubhouse, so Brannion is just another figure who can step in, give some leadership, maybe a little almost continuity, help out some of the young players. Certainly he'll also be good. I mean, let's not lose sight of the fact that Russell Brannion is also a good hitter, a very powerful hitter, completely unlike any other hitter we have in the lineup.
Right.
So in that sense, you can see his value from the clubhouse perspective. I also lost my train of thought, which was leading to my second thought, which was super deep and insightful. But seeing as that is now gone, we can move on to talking about Brannion's future. So, I mean, what this effectively does, it buries Mike Karp. I think it's clear Mike Karp, a lot like Vladimir Ballantyne, I guess, is going to have a career where people are like, no, you have to give him a shot. You have to let him play. And then the Mariners don't, and he leaves. And people will be like, well, why didn't you let him play? You were bad. He was young. Give him a shot. But, I mean, you don't always need a bunch of major league proof or evidence to see what a player can do. I mean, that's one of the things we've been railing against ever since Adam Jones is in the system, that sometimes you just know what a young player is. You can evaluate a skill set. You could evaluate Mike Karp if you were playing against little leaguers.
Yeah.
He would probably look really good against the little leaguers. God, can you imagine the walk rates? Oh, God.
Well, he'd have a pretty big strike zone to what they're used to. He would crush every strike they threw.
Man, I don't know how the power translates from little league ballparks to the majors. That's some
crazy
kind of park factor.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Mike Karp is done. I think it's plainly evident he's, I don't know if he's going to be a career minor leaguer, but he's done here. He's never going to get a shot here unless Brannion gets hurt, which, hey, maybe. So he's done. Brannion has that option for 2011, which I believe you told me was $5 million mutual.
Yes.
All right. So what we're going to do, I imagine, over the next 3 months is see how Brannion holds up, see if he's healthy, see how he hits. And all of a sudden, if Brannion is similar to the guy he was last year, if he's similar to the guy he's been with Cleveland for the first 2.5 months, then, hey, we have a first baseman who is better than Karp, better than anything in the system. If we want him back next year, and he'll be 35, I think, so he probably isn't going to want to go all in the market and try again because he's
right.
Russell Brannion. So all of a sudden, maybe that means we have a $5 million middle-of-the-order bet, who, granted, could fall off the map at any point, but if he's good through the end of this year, then you have fewer doubts about next year because, except with people like Griffey, generally players don't just fall off a cliff literally overnight or over one offseason. So then Brannion could be good next year, which just it solves a problem that for which this team didn't have an in-house solution. And it's a pretty cheap solution, all things considered, when you consider they're not going to go get Adrian Gonzalez. They're not going to get like the one of the Marlins' young first basemen. They didn't really have much. They had Mike Karp, and Brannion gives them at least an option, which I think is, that has value. It has more value than I think Diaz or Carrera would ever have.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that Mike Karp is done, because I do think the most likely situation is that Kochman gets non-tendered, because of, you know, just how much he's going to end up costing. And if they do decide to keep Russell Branyon around for 2011, then Mike Carr stays in Tacoma to be his, you know, his injury insurance, basically. But yeah, that the, you know, $5 million mutual option, I would think that Branyon would take it. I don't think he's ever really gotten paid in his career. He's never landed any sort of payday. You know, speaking from a major league sense, obviously I would take his paydays, but the option, I think if the Mariners said like, well, we're picking up your mutual option, if he finishes out 2010, like, well, not like how he finished out 2009, that'd be bad, but the numbers wise, not so much with the herniated disc, but if he finished out with good numbers and the Mariners picked up his option, you know, if I were him, I'd probably be pretty tempted to take the guaranteed $5 million deal.
Yeah.
And sock away some a nice increase in financial future that I don't think he's even sniffed before. But like you said, with options, I'm not sure the Mariners had a better option at first base, really, for 2011. You're looking at the easiest thing. It's always hard to predict what the Mariners, especially the Mariners, could do on the trade market because, wow, we never have any idea. But it certainly seems like we don't have the pieces to – well, we have the pieces to trade for Adrian Gonzalez, but I'm not sure why we would do that, especially with coming into it, 2011 would be the last year of Adrian Gonzalez's team control. So he would kind of be the 2011 Cliff Lee, which is not the smart – you know, if we could trade, you know, Filippo Mont and Tyson Gillies and Juan Carlos Ramirez for 1 year of Adrian Gonzalez, then wow, that would get us all excited again. But that's probably not likely. Adrian Gonzalez would probably take a landfill and several other, you know, things that are actually valuable.
Is anybody? Yeah, who wants a landfill?
A landfill full of valuable things.
Oh.
That for some reason that were thrown out.
So
I don't know why.
Like if you deradiated the area around Chernobyl where they have all like the military vehicles and the fire trucks, and then it's like, oh wait, no, they're clean now. You can have all of that scrap metal?
Maybe like a landfill of valuable metallics or something, like, I don't know, like bismuth or something.
Bismuth, okay.
So what was I saying? Oh, so the easiest thing to you know, compare it against is free agents or a freely available talent that the Mariners could get starting for 2011. And looking at the potential free agent market, wow, it sucks.
Yeah.
Wow, it sucks. And that's one thing that needs to be taken into consideration when people talk about the payroll as it already is, because, you know, people keep saying like, oh, you know, we only have $15, $20 million to spend. Well, there's not really much to spend it on in the free agent market. It's going to have to come through trades. Mm-hmm. Much like it was this past offseason, because really, at least as far as first base, non-really crappy bats at first base that are available out there looks to be like Carlos Peña, who I wouldn't want to touch, and Adam Dunn, who I wouldn't want to touch.
And who it looks like could easily re-up with Washington.
Right.
Seems
so
the way that's headed.
When you look at possible free agent acquisitions, I'm not so sure that Russell Branyon on a one-year, $5 million deal isn't maybe not the ultimate best thing you could do, but it's certainly not going to be something that's looked down upon.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's the trade option, but I just never want to sit here and be like – and get pissed that the Mariners aren't, well, why aren't you trading for this guy? Because we have no idea. Yeah. Maybe he's trying his hardest. Maybe he's still trying. Who knows? I mean, there's just I don't see any real room to criticize on trade speculation because we don't even have half the story. We have no sides of the story.
Like with someone like Kila, I regret bringing this up. What's his name?
Kaihu.
Kila Kaihu?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, with someone like him, his name comes up all the time. He's like, he's become an internet meme, basically, of, hey, somebody's got to unblock this guy, like with Jack Cust earlier in the decade, or with, I don't know, maybe even Ryan Sheely. Does he count?
I remember when we wanted him that half of a year, and then he got unblocked, and oh, he was bad.
Yeah. I mean, with someone like Kila, Kila, fans aren't the only people who notice this, you know? Other organizations know more than we do, they're going to be like, hey, why is this guy still in the minors? Why is he down there blocked when he is currently batting 308 in Omaha with a 1.052 OPS? He has killed AAA, but, I mean, at this point, he is 26 years old, turned 26 in March, and the Royals have given him all of 28 Major League plate appearances. And granted, I know, it's the Royals, but then you figure, the Royals aren't incompetent.
Yeah, they are.
They aren't completely incompetent. They are the Astros incompetent.
Yeah, no, they really are.
All right, I'm sorry to
shoot this down on you, because generally I think you're right, but this is the Royals.
I'm going to take a different angle. Scratch everything I just said. I was joking. Matthew caught it. Good job, Matthew. I'm proud of you. So
gold star for me.
In the minors. He's been down there this whole time. Other organizations are aware of it. They know that the Royals clearly aren't going to give him a fair shot. He's done there without ever really having gotten started. So you would think teams, if they think he's a good player, would try to trade for him. I mean, he's been blocked for what? People have been talking about him for 2 or 3 years now, I think. People, I'm sure, have approached the Royals about him, and either the asking price is too high, or there's just something about him that teams are finding unattractive, unpleasant, maybe that they don't want to trade for. So, always, there is a reason. With something like free agency, we're a little more free to speculate and say, hey, that was a stupid signing, because that's way too much money, more than this guy deserves. Both trades, you never know about. I mean, we never know about the trades the Mariners actually make until they happen. So,
right.
we just find out so little that you have to assume, if you see somebody in the minors and he catches your fancy and you're like, hey, this guy's really interesting, he's caught the eye of most other teams in baseball too. They're aware of him. They know what his deal is. And if they think he's a good player, many of them will try to make a move for him. And the fact that Keela is still there where he is and stuck, I think it says something about him. And while I can't put my finger on what, I would say there's probably a reason he's not a Mariner right now and why he's still a Royal.
Yeah, I would agree with the last sentence. The other stuff I'm a little bit more wary about, because it almost seems like you're kind of inching towards the territory of, like, there must be something wrong with him, which I don't think is what your intention is, but it can kind of come off that way, where it's more just, I think the last sentence was right. It's just like, there's a reason why he's not a Mariner yet. We at least as far as Jack Cerenzik know and Tony Blangino and all that kind of stuff, like, we're pretty sure that they know who Keela Kaiahu is and what he's doing, and that the Royals are the Royals. And I mean, for God's sakes, they traded him uni. They know who the Royals are.
Yeah. So the Mariners know who Preston Vansill is. They know Keela Kaiahu.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And they know they have a depth problem at first base. They have to approach the Royals about this. They're not that. Well, I don't know.
Well, I don't know if I wouldn't say they had to have approached them, but they had to have either approached them before if they didn't this time, or they must have a reason of their own, maybe their own scouting. I don't know.
I'd like to think that I'm 90% convinced that there's a good reason why.
Yeah.
There is that other 10%, though.
You know, there's the other 10% that's kind of the writer in you, the internet.
No, that other 10% is entirely the 10% that's around because Cliff Lee is not signed to a contract extension. God damn it, sign him to a contract extension.
The one last thing I wanted to say about the Russell Brannan trade, I guess there's two more. I mean, for one thing, he will make the team more fun to watch, and ultimately that's what we want. And I don't think that's ever something you just trade for. I don't want the Mariners to go out and trade for
Eric Burns.
Eric Burns. Actually, I mean, but there is value. So the fan half of me is glad that, like, hey, so the next 90 games could be a little less yesterday, you know?
Yeah, right, exactly.
But the other thing, we talked about this a little in the warm-up, but what inconsiderate timing to make that trade. I found out about this trade at like 9:15 on a Saturday night. I was at a bar. It was texted to me like shortly after it went down, so it wasn't like I was delayed. This happened late Saturday night on the West Coast. On the East Coast, it was past midnight, and so I wasn't home. I couldn't write about it. Fortunately, Matthew is home, so he could write about it. Sorry to throw you in the bus. Matthew. And you figure everybody who covers the team is home, sleeping, I don't know, doing something that sports journalists do at night. And Russell Brannion was probably, I don't know, out after a game, maybe with his wife and his family, maybe out with some teammates, probably drinking, maybe at home, making some more babies. You know, but Russell Brannion, the last thing he was thinking about on a Saturday night was, hey, my home is changing now. Like, I'm going back where I was a year ago. The whole thing must seem really annoying to the Brannion family. Like, are you serious? Two last place teams, and do we have to shift back and forth?
But then again, he probably is also thinking, I don't have to live in Cleveland anymore.
Yeah, there's that thing, but... we already talked about that, didn't we?
So yeah.
The whole, like, the trade came out of nowhere. Literally, every element of it was a complete surprise. There was no indication that a move is going to get made then, or that a move is going to get made for Russell Brannion. So it's just maybe the culmination of the Mariners front office, like, hey, I don't think anybody expects this. Let's do it now. Like,
well, there was a moment of panic when I first got the second text message about, because your first text message was, are you home? And the second one was like, we just traded for Brannion. And it was just that. And so then I was like, oh, wait, we traded Cliff Lee for Russell Brannion? Because like, well, what else are we trading? It didn't make any sense.
Young player.
So yeah, no, it's kind of like that's telling. Is like that was my reaction. I was like, how is Cliff Lee involved?
To Cleveland? Let's take everybody home. Well, no, that wouldn't make sense.
It's 2008 again.
Or Cliff Lee sucks now.
You know what gets? You know what needs to be written about more? That man, Cliff Lee was bad. Like just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, like just... 3 years. 3 years ago, but. He went from average to slightly above average starter to wow. I mean, he had like a Dontrelle Willis meltdown and then came back to be the best pitcher in the major leagues. It was kind of like a Roy Halladay thing.
Yeah, it was like a Roy Halladay thing, except I think he did it. Maybe he went to the minors a little bit. Let me double check. So he was in the minors for...
Cliff Lee went to AAA, yeah.
Yeah, he went all the way down to single A for one start. I don't know. Oh, but he was hurt in 2007, so he was rehabbing also, so it's hard to separate that. But yeah, he went from, sorry to use this term, but a 6 ERA in 2007 to a 2.5 in 2008. He always kind of threw strikes and missed some bats, but then he was like, well, I want to be better now, but I don't just want to be better. I want to see how much better I can be. I'm going to go 22-3 for the Indians and see where that takes me. See how that strikes my fancy. Like, people just don't do this. At 29 years old, he turned around and became... I think even when he was a prospect, when he was with the Expos, when he got traded to Cleveland, people were always like, oh, Cliff Lee, he could be a pretty good number two, number three starter. No, he's become an ace. He's become arguably the best pitcher in baseball. In his late 20s and 30s, people don't figure it out like this. Like, baseball is not, clearly, based on Cliff Lee, baseball is not a physical thing. It's not a purely athletic thing. There's a lot in the head. There's a lot of smarts that go into being a good player. Cliff Lee figured
it out. It's almost like when he got demoted to AAA, he sat down with somebody like you or me and got explained to, like, hey, ground balls, good. Walks, bad. Strikeouts, good. And he's like, oh, okay. Done.
It's funny you say that, because I had this written down. There have been some articles coming out about Jason Vargas watching Cliff Lee, Ryan Roland Smith watching Cliff Lee, Felix watching Cliff Lee, people, Mariners pitchers who are watching Cliff Lee, and they're getting a positive influence. You know, Cliff Lee is making them better. But it's never like, oh, Cliff Lee was working with them on this pitch, or like he was showing them this technique to throw more strikes. It was like people watch Cliff Lee, and they realized, oh, strikes.
Yeah,
like, that's been the big epiphany for this pitching staff. Like, oh, work fast, throw strikes. Cliff Lee told me that. Like, okay, on the one hand, that's stupid. You pitchers are retarded. On the second hand, you coaches are retarded. If it took this, like, I'm actually really excited to see what kind of influence Lee has on the rest of the pitching staff. Not that we'll be able to isolate it, but just to see if they actually benefit, like, long term. Maybe Cliff Lee really will make Ryan Roland Smith not awful again. But, man, like, how... I guess it kind of makes sense. I mean, Cliff Lee didn't know until he was 29, right?
Yeah.
What do people get told in the minors?
Well, probably also has something to do with, like, you know, if I was a player trying to get inside their head, I might not, you know, I'd be kind of skeptical about things coaches just told me, because I'd be like, no, what do you know? You were probably, you know, coaches are generally bad major league players. But then they go out and see Cliff Lee doing it. It's like, oh, hey, this actually works.
Oh, strike, you want to get ahead in the count. Oh, God bless you, talented veteran. We've had a World Series ring. We won't win one here.
What's all the more argument to keep Cliff Lee around.
It's boring on irrational, which is why I haven't written up a post on this, especially because Lee is like 31 now, 32. He's going to be looking for big money, last big contract of his life probably, but he certainly strikes me as the kind of guy who is not going to age poorly.
Yeah, you know? And pitchers age differently. And he already doesn't rely on, I don't know if it's better or worse that he doesn't rely on high heat. Mm-hmm. But he seems like a guy who knows how to pitch, and God knows Jamie Moyer still, we should sign Cliff Lee to a 15-year contract.
What's crazy to me is that Cliff Lee took last year and made it better still. Like, the strike rates he's throwing now, 73% strikes, it's unfathomable. Yeah. He was at 68 last year, and he was near the league lead. But he's just gotten better at throwing strikes. It doesn't happen like this.
Well, it's just as insane as 2006 Carlos Silva. I mean, Carlos Silva in 2006 walked 7 people unintentionally for a full season. 7 people. Mm-hmm. That's what? Cliff Lee is better than that.
Here's the amazing thing. And the thing that's always kind of about that Silva year, it's not on Stat Corner, but let me pull this up real quick. But what I recall is that Silva didn't walk anybody. He did have... I didn't actually realize that 2 of his 9 walks were...
intentional.
Yeah, it's true. In my head, it was always 9 walks in a full season. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But no, it's actually 7, which... 7. Wow! That's a low walk rate!
You son of a bitch.
Ha! But the thing about Silva is the reason that he was... One of the reasons he had such low walk rates, he pounded the zone, but he also allowed early contact. So he was just like... first, second, third pitch of the at-bats, the ball was being put in play. Yeah, no, Cliff Lee isn't doing that. Cliff Lee is also striking people out at a well above average rate. So he's like that one time he went to 19 0-2 counts. I wish there were leaderboards so I can see the most 0-2 counts in a game, because that's insane to me.
Do you want me to get you a leaderboard for that?
Are you being serious?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, done.
I want to see... Yeah, 0-2 leaderboards, like a pitcher's ahead in the count, behind the count leaderboards. I think that would be interesting, because there's not a whole lot of work done.
Huh? I'll get you 0-2 counts.
Okay.
That'll be up before this podcast post is.
Well, that'll be interesting. I think 0-2. I also, one of the reasons, there's a big difference between first
anything to make
rate.
Cliff Lee look good.
You interrupted me, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. There's a big thing between getting ahead in the count with strike one and getting a new count 0-2. We already got it. Moving on.
Oh.
See, the worst part about us podcasting is that we know exactly where each other is going to go.
Now I feel bad.
Which then leads me to, oh, Jeff's going to say this point for the next 5 minutes. I'm going to zone out. And then you come back to me with like an unexpected question. I'm like, much like the Russell Branion thing.
So, Ms. Jeff... will on occasion say something like, oh, I knew you were going to say that. And I know when people say that, they don't mean to be crude, like cruel or insulting, but it drives me crazy because I hate the idea of being that predictable. So then it makes me become more unpredictable, which I think people don't like, because the benefit of getting to know somebody is that they're predictable. So I don't like being told that you know what's coming. It just makes me say things like, hey, about Carlos Silva, did you know that in 2005, he had a perfect fielding percentage, which, by the way, he did. But what I was going to say before you so rudely finished my thought, you know, it's not cute when you do this. It's not like lovers finishing the other person's sentence. It's really insulting. What I was going to say.
It's the first time I've ever done that.
I know.
Generally, we just say the same thing at the same time.
They bring this up a lot on the broadcast, like Blowers or Sims will, first pitch strikes. And it's important to throw first pitch strikes. It's good to be in the zone because you don't want to fall behind. The opposite of a first pitch strike is a first pitch ball, and then you're behind.
And then you're Ryan Roland Smith.
And then you're Ryan Roland Smith all of the time, except for the first two innings of Friday. But
when he was good. He was good. Ryan, do that. Strikes.
God, I bet he is listening.
First pitch strikes.
Hey, Ryan. How's it going? What I was saying is that you don't want to make that first pitch hittable, because when people swing and make contact with first pitches, it is usually bad for the pitcher. Those go in play for better, I believe, rates than just your standard balls in play. So the real key is getting ahead 0-1. I know Matthew saw that coming. I'm sure many of you saw that coming. But it's not just about throwing a fastball in the zone first pitch. You want to maybe throw something difficult to hit, maybe something that just misses, induces a swing, maybe something like a big looping curveball that gets you ahead, because it just is such an advantage to get ahead 0-1 that people know it's good to be ahead and it's bad to be behind. I don't know if they understand the degree.
Yeah, it's mammoth. It's a huge, huge difference. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's to the point where I'll look back, I'll come across the numbers occasionally about, you know, hitters after 0-1 versus hitters after 1-0, and it always surprises me every time I see it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about the difference between Pedro Feliz and Albert Pujols.
Well, here, we can do this right now. Average hitter behind 0-1 this year, 621 OPS. That's bad. Average hitter after 1-0. 824 OPS. So it's right there. That's a 200-point difference, which is actually lower than I expected. But still, 200 points.
Yeah.
It is the difference between being the best and the worst hitter in your lineup is that first pitch.
Yep. I mean, as you brought up with the Cliff Lee, he's getting the strikeouts too. He's running a 17 strikeout to walk ratio right now.
What was 19? Oh.
19. You're right. No, yeah, it's 19. 76-4. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 19-1. And we're about halfway through the season now, so it's not like this is totally a small sample size fluke. I mean, he can regress, and it's still going to be good. I think the major league record was 11-1. I think that was Brett Saberhagen or something like that. But Cliff Lee is almost doubling Major League Baseball's all-time record. And I don't know if you know this, but baseball's been played for a long time.
Although the one that always sticks out in my mind is, I think, early, here we go, 2006 Ben Sheets, where he started half the year, 17 starts, and he struck out 116 batters, and he unintentionally walked 10. And that was always, for me, like the pinnacle of, wow, this guy throws a lot of strikes, and he doesn't walk anybody. Cliff Lee is on pace to, blow that out of the water. And granted, when you're dealing with strikeout-to-walk ratio and a denominator of 4, you're going to get some extreme swings. So, when Cliff Lee walks his next guy, that ratio is going to drop a lot. But it's one of those points where you don't have to be statistically accurate, or you can be a little deceiving or misleading, I guess, with it, because it's just you're saying that stat because it's fun. 19 strikeouts to every walk. You're not trying to analyze with it. You're just pointing out, hey, oh my God.
Yeah. And I guess one thing that I found especially with the season being the way it is that at this point now I'm just rooting for more than anything for Cliff Lee to not walk people. that is what's interesting to me. I'd rather him give up home runs than walk people. Yeah. I want to root for history. I want to be I saw the season that Cliff Lee walked 5 guys.
And then got traded. After he gets traded, man, I hope he walks the world. Hey, everybody see that? Cliff Lee walked 2 guys in the game. Oh, God.
What a loser.
This sounds weird, but I kind of like watching Cliff Lee give up home runs just because of how quickly he comes back. He'll give up a long fly ball, then you blink, and then it's oh, he's ahead 0-2. My guy. He's unfazable. When people, remember he made that backhand play, I think, in the World Series last year. This, mindless play on the mound, everybody's like, wow, he has balls of steel. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, no, true, by the way, that is Cliff Lee. He cannot be, he's been through hell. He stared the end of his career in the face, and he came back and became the best pitcher, arguably the best pitcher in baseball. It's amazing. He's perfect for this team, and it's going to kill me when he goes.
Yeah, at this point, there are very few people that reach this era. I'm not even sure if there really has been anybody in recent history, even kind of Felix, but there's the point where, well, I guess Felix was kind of in the air, but Cliff Lee even more so than Felix, where it was just like, you know what, I don't really care what signing Cliff Lee does to our payroll in 2011. I don't care. I 0% care. Mm-hmm. Sign Cliff Lee. Don't let him go away.
And you really, you think about it and you think, yeah, he is also, what we've seen already, for a team that he's going to be away from probably in a month, he's put so much into this team. He's made this his team almost, or he's taken this team upon himself. He's become a leader when he's really just a mercenary of sorts. And yeah. He didn't need to. He could have just gone out and pitched well and earned himself a trade and brought this team a return, and that would have been the end of it. Everyone would have been happy with his contribution. But he's... God, it hurts me. He loves the team so much, and I love him back.
And really, what's the most you're going to be able to actually do with the money you would save by not signing Cliff Lee?
Not getting a guy with four walks. That's not what you're going to do unless you re-sign Unieski Betancourt.
Oh, nice. I mean, yeah. I don't even think the drop-off from Cliff Lee to ultra-ideal scenario in which you use the 15 or whatever million that Cliff Lee wants to sign or trade for two other Cliff Lees. I mean, even if you thought they could do that, if you could let Cliff Lee walk and then pull off the Cliff Lee trade twice this winter, first of all, assuming, so that, say the money balances out because Cliff Lee makes $9 million this year and maybe, you know, was worth about $18 million on the open market next year. So let's say they could somehow do that. You're still only out, like, I mean, okay, only. you're out probably what we projected for Cliff Lee, 5.5 wins, mm-hmm. 5 to 5.5 wins. So you're out 5.5 wins under the most insane scenario. That's probably what you're losing. A realistic solution is you're maybe out, what, 2 wins, I guess? And that's still assuming that Jack Sorensic's able to pull off really favorable trades this winter with that kind of money. Mm-hmm. I don't care. The entertainment of watching Cliff Lee, to me, just the entertainment factor of Cliff Lee is worth like 4 wins to me.
You know, the reason that, or I think what's ultimately going to be a big reason why the Mariners can't and won't re-sign Cliff Lee, one, Carlos Silva. Because Milton Bradley's taking up a huge chunk of the payroll next year, and granted, I still think Bradley can turn into something, but you could take that money and pretty much turn it into a year of Cliff Lee, by the way.
Well, you know, even still, that's only 1 year. They could just backload Cliff Lee's contract.
That's true. I know if you look at 2011 right now, if you trust Kotz, we are on the hook for almost $70 million already next year.
Yeah, I put it at about 75 after the arbitration and yeah. Club control guys that we're definitely going to keep.
Yeah, I mean, and you can try to trade Jack Wilson, I guess, and do something there.
I don't really I don't understand why, because it's like we don't have a replacement for Jack Wilson.
Well, I don't know. I guess it means if it's the difference between not having Cliff Lee and having Cliff Lee, then all of a sudden you make.
Well, then I trade anybody.
And also, I mean, there's the whole Eric Bedard situation. We'll see how he comes back. He is one to keep in mind for next year. Granted, having Felix at his best kind of had an effect on... Well, no, okay. Those are separate. But having Cliff Lee is going to make Eric Bedard look less appealing. Eric Bedard's really good when he's healthy. At least when he was healthy. He was a very good pitcher.
And almost as exciting. Cute.
Almost as cute. Not quite as cute. It didn't pull as well with the women of the household.
And it is women, because we have them... Just we have lots of them around.
Yeah, I just sleep in a pile of women. Like, it's actually kind of disgusting.
Alive ones, even.
A what?
Alive ones, too.
Yeah, living ones who, like, shuffle around. It's like a pit of snakes. It's like you just struggle for air, and it's like, oh, that's a fingernail. And it's like, I just want to sleep comfortably, and there's just women everywhere. It's really quite awesome. Bedard is a very good pitcher. We'll see how he comes back. Well, I know he has an option for next year. I think it's pretty expensive.
$11 million.
$11 million. I thought it was
no, it's $11 million. At least according to Kotz, I believe it was stated as $11 million.
$8 million club option.
Oh well, then somebody was freaking retarded.
And 2011 option may increase based on 2010 performance. He'll be around. I most optimistically for half of 2010, so we'll see. Bedard, with that option, would be pricey.
Yeah.
He remains, though, an option, and certainly we'll see how Pineda does. I mean, right now, it's really easy to be pessimistic about next year's rotation, but it's also really easy not to be, you know? Because, hey, young players like Pineda always get you excited. And then when you already have people like Lee and Bedard in-house, even though they're probably going to be free agents this winter, it somehow makes you feel a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, maybe we could bring one of them back. Because, I mean, Lee's enjoyed his time. We've given Bedard so many breaks. The team has been nice to him. So, hey, who knows? I mean, it really... God damn it, Silva! Ugh! That money hurts. And y'all, you fans, better get out of the ballpark and give this team some money.
Yeah.
Hey, you know who's eligible for arbitration this winter? Sean White.
Yeah. I did not count him among the $75 million.
Oh, man, I would non-tender him. So I would send him a non-tender on email and be like, oh, wait, I didn't know if that went through, so here's another one. Now we're going to copy your parents.
Yeah, also I mailed it to you. And all of your forwarding addresses.
Ding dong, who's there? Singing telegram.
Oh, man, I was just thinking that.
Hey, Sean White, what do you think about this cut of steak? Oh, I don't know, it's pretty rare. Would you say it's tender? Yeah. Well, you know it's not tender?
God damn it. That's also what I was going to say. I would try to work tender in as many conversations as I could.
Hey, what do you think of this piece of paper? That's pretty firm, right? Not very tender? Yeah. I should have done that one before the steak one. If I could go back in time. Hey, Sean, do you think I could have a tender moment with you in my office? Just
there we go.
No, you want to have a non-tender moment? I'm happy to have a non-tender moment.
That one's good. That's good.
Moving on. So I mean, it's really, really way too early to speculate about next year's payroll. And really, we have to see when we face the unfortunate prospect of trading Lee, we have to see what we get back. And we can talk about this for a bit, even though I'm not real up to speed on other teams' prospects. It seems like there's a 300% chance that we end up with Wilson Ramos, even if we don't trade with the Twins. It's weird.
Yeah. I'm not thrilled about that at all.
I am troubled with the prospect of adding a very good young player who is having the year that he's having.
Well, even I think the people that are like pro Wilson Ramos are like, he's kind of the Minnesota's Adam Moore. I'm like, well, is that supposed to make me happy?
Like, yeah, you don't trade Cliff Lee for an incremental improvement on your prospects.
Right.
You can only have one catcher. And Ramos is a good player. He's never been an out-of-this-world player. Granted, he's always been young for his level. And Baseball America rated him very highly. But at the end of the day, he doesn't strike me as an elite-level prospect. And you want to move Lee for somebody who can really make a difference going forward. We have Moore. We have Rob Johnson. We have Steve Barron. But by the way, hey, look up his numbers if you want to have some funsies this afternoon. But we already have two catchers, young catchers, who aren't that good, but they're cheap, they're under team control, and they're not awful. I mean, I feel bad for swaying the community completely against Rob Johnson, because while he's bad, he's not like the worst player ever.
He was when he was hitting like 2009 Rob Johnson. He's gotten a little bit better at hitting.
Yeah, we've talked about his offense before. He's better than people give him credit for, even though he's not actually good. He's a catcher. Ultimately, though, Wilson Ramos is not the guy that I want. It would really... how nice would it be to find a shortstop? I think the Rays would trade Reed Briniac.
I was going to say, you know who, from a catching perspective, you know who we need is like John Jussieu.
Yeah.
And Reed Briniac. Both on the Rays. You know who the Rays could use? A really good starter.
And they're probably, let's see, the Rays might be willing to move Wade Davis, although I'm not really Wade Davis' biggest fan.
Yeah. But hey, if they wanted to send us John Jussieu and Reed Briniac, and I don't even care about anybody else. Except, no, wait, screw that. It's, no, Cliff Lee. No.
Yeah.
No. No, fuck you, Tampa.
Yeah, fuck you, Tampa. I'd rather trade with the Yankees.
No, I'm not. We're not trading, damn it, we're not trading Cliff Lee.
All It'd be funny if people would call Jack Zarensic and he had these little conversations with himself. Like, well, yeah, I mean, I'm really most interested in Brainiac and just, but no, fuck, I'm not fucking trading to you. Are you fucking kidding? Christ, it's Cliff Lee. Get the fuck out of here. Block. People just stop calling him altogether. Like, Jack has lost his mind. He starts calling other teams like, oh, well, I guess I'm willing to talk to you about Ramos. But no, I'm not fucking trading Cliff Lee. Fuck that. You want Doug Fister? Fuck you, you fucking whack-a-mole piece of shit. Cliff Lee's ours. This is our property. Call up Cliff
Lee. Or just like starts inserting anywhere, other names. And yeah, so we're really interested in Cliff Lee. Uh-huh, Ian Snell. Right. Okay. Yeah, we can work with that. What?
Well, that reminds me that, I gotta pull this up. Ian Snell made his second start with Tacoma.
Oh.
Yeah. Big news for this former Mariner. So his first start was interesting because he struck out 9 in 5 innings. Like, oh, hey, he's doing it again. Yeah, well, you know what he's doing again now? The rest of his career. He walked 4 and struck out 3 in his most recent start. 4 innings, 5 hits, 4 runs, 4 walks, 3 strikeouts. Bunch of fly balls against Sacramento. Fuck you, Ian Snell. You are miserable.
He is miserable.
Oh, God.
Poor Ian.
He was born in Delaware. We never made enough fun of the fact that he's born in Delaware and his middle name is Dante.
Yeah. Oh, his middle name is Dante?
Yeah. Well, thanks for these circles of hell, you son of a bitch.
Oh, I want him back now.
We can still do it. Let's force it. If we put up the post now before the podcast goes up, people will think it's fresh.
Oh.
Man, we blew it.
Oh, we did. Oh, that makes me like him even more. I always kind of like Ian Snell.
The fact his last name rhymes with smell. Oh, man, what a Snelly start, lol. His middle name is Dante, and it went untouched. Godspeed, next owner of Ian Snell. With greater care than us.
I wonder who that'll be.
I am surprised you didn't get claimed by Kansas City, but then I also wasn't, because why? He'll be a free agent.
Yeah, it's the money issue.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that we actually sketched out an outline for this podcast, and then as soon as Cliff Lee came up, we talked about Cliff Lee for 40 minutes or however long it's been. Do you get how much we love Cliff Lee?
He's very good and nice and handsome. He appeals to everybody. Like, there's not Ichiro has people who don't like him. Franklin Gutierrez has people who think he's overrated. Cliff Lee has people who love him and people who lust after him and us, like, on the next level. Like, don't go. Please don't go. Like, he's become what Griffey was to people, except good. I would send Cliff Lee up as a pinch hitter just for the chance to give him a standing ovation.
Yeah.
And also because he could be a DH.
I pray to him every night.
Yeah.
And do other things to him every morning.
That's interesting. Cliff Lee has zero career.
Awkward.
Oh, God, I would be so jealous.
Yeah, okay.
I just got it. Hot flash. Cliff.
I don't know. Did we want to keep trying to go with some other stuff, or do you think that's been enough?
I think that's probably been enough. I mean, we could talk about Brian Sweeney or David Bolle, but ultimately, who cares? They probably won't even be on the roster by the time this gets posted.
True. I guess we should give Brian Sweeney his 5 minutes of podcast, because he'll never get another 5 minutes ever again.
That's true. And Brian, I mean, he might be listening to this. So, hey, Brian. Hey, how's it going? How's Japan? I know, killer Hornets. They're crazy and big. Glad you had fun. What's interesting about Brian Sweeney is that he wasn't actually good in Japan. So if like, his change-up first approach is the result, it took him a long time to figure it out. Or Japanese hitters just owned him for it for some reason, even though Japanese hitters are pretty bad.
Well, but they do say that like the backwards pitching is much more prevalent in Japan, so he could have learned how to do that over there, and it still wouldn't have fooled Japanese hitters, which then I guess begs the question of why he bothered learning it. But
I know what could work in another continent.
man, if I ever get back to the major leagues, I'll show them. Except it actually worked.
Yeah, so Brian Sweeney, man, he was committed to the, well, not joke, committed to the adjustment. But, I mean, so what's interesting is that he came back and he pitched for Tacoma, and he was very good for his limited amount of time. And it's weird to be talking about a 36-year-old Bieber, like he has some sort of promise. But, I mean, yeah. He had 4 strikeouts every walk. That's interesting. I mean, he's better than Garrett Olson.
Or Sean White.
Yeah, add Sweeney to the list. Sean White was optioned to Tacoma and instantly became their mop-up guy. Like, their manager had no loyalty, no allegiance to Sean White. So he could just use, let's see, Lavelle Spiner, Chad Cordero, Mike Koplov, Scott Patterson, Andrew Baldwin, Brian Sweeney, Yusmeyr Patia is still there. That's cool. I completely forgot that we still have him as a starter.
We have a lot of people in our bullpen in Tacoma.
And, like, Joe Nelson is interesting. Wes Littleton is interesting.
Wait, really? Wes Littleton?
Yeah.
Former Florida Marlin Wes Littleton?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Former Ranger Wes Littleton.
Oh. Wes Littleton sounds like somebody who should have played for the Marlins. Wes Helms.
Yes.
Wes Helms, that's who I was thinking of.
Wes Helms. Wes Helms reminds me of Jeff Conine, and Jeff Conine reminds me of baseball.
Weird.
Oh, by the way, it turns out Wes Littleton isn't actually good.
What? He isn't actually good?
Cross him off the list, and here I thought we had something.
You know who I miss? Dave Magadan. I don't really miss him, but I was just thinking about Florida Marlins and Dave Magadan.
I liked Chris Carr because he was the first player I ever heard of whose last name got my attention. Like, oh, he's a player in a vehicle. I'm going to hit a home run with him in this video game that I'm playing. Man, that game had Charlie Huff. I'm old enough to have played a video game with Charlie Huff in it. That's cool. Dave Magadan, is he still a coach?
Fascinating. What?
Is Dave Magadan still a coach somewhere?
Probably.
Dave Magadan reminds me of the San Diego Padres, who, as of this speaking, are 45-30. Their division gap is up to 4.5 games.
Impressive.
Every time the Padres lose, every time I think, oh God, this is it. It's not. It hasn't been it. They've lost 30 times. They've bounced back. It's weird. But, I guess this is proof that if the Mariners were doing well, I still wouldn't believe it.
It doesn't really matter how well the Mariners are constructed. I'm not going to believe it the first time they do well. So, you know, that doesn't really mean anything.
Oh, here's a fun fact. Adrian Gonzalez's OPS is about 200 points higher than number 2 on the Padres. Wow, maybe it is all about the big bad.
Playoffs!
Matt Latos has become...
We are now exactly like the Padres.
Well, we're one Adrian Gonzalez away.
But we have Russell Brannon.
Oh, yeah. Equals! Actually, no, they have a bullpen you can trust.
We thought we were going to have a bullpen we could trust until it turns out that no... Let's not let them throw their best pitches and see how well they do.
Well, I think that
surprise,
sounds like it's Brandon's decision. And then, of course, Mark Lowe got hurt. And while I was never the biggest Mark Lowe fan in the world, he was clearly better than, you know, bad pitchers.
Yeah.
It's weird looking back that nobody made a bigger deal of the fact that he had a herniated disc at the time. Like, when has the herniated disc ever gotten better in a couple weeks?
True. Remember when we were like... Oh, Sean White, forget about him because he's got a torn up shoulder. And then he did well in spring training and we're kind of like, oh, maybe Sean White's not hurt. That's good news. Whoa, that was not good news.
No, that was bad news. Bad news. Shame on you, Sean White, for getting healthy. Healthy you is bad.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to... Oh, man. I think I'm onto something here. I think I'm onto something here. Sean White's last strikeout was May 18th. I know
that was
the minors.
That was a long time ago.
He hadn't struck out a major league batter for a month and a week. And he has, so four of his five strikeouts came in a four-game span. In the rest of his 18 games, he has one strikeout.
You know who has infinitely more strikeouts in the last 5 weeks than Sean White?
Like
Brian
everybody?
Sweeney. Yeah, so there you go, Brian Sweeney. There's your little, not that you care. Why would you care? Man, if you care, you need to find other things to care about. Struck out four batters. You're relevant now in the major leagues. You should not care what we say on a podcast for a blog.
Yeah, that is low, Brian Sweeney. You are desperate. God, no wonder you've been shuffled around. You were such a loner.
Yeah, man. Buck up. You know, hang out with Ryan some more. He'll teach you some like positive thinking. Yeah.
Have some more confidence, especially in your fastball. Let's see what happens then.
No, don't have confidence in your fastball.
Oh, wait,
Ryan.
No, take back seats. Don't. Be low. Be desperate. Hate yourself.
Yeah. All right.
In closing, Sean White is bad. Oh, by the way, yes. Sean White now has more career walks than strikeouts. And a career ERA of 4.27, which is bad.
Well, it's not that bad.
Well, it's not good enough to trust as a major league reliever, considering he spent all his time in Safeco. His ERA is 6.87, and Don Wakamatsu still trusts him. ERA is flawed. Don Wakamatsu is flawed.
Sean White bad.
Sean White bad. See you next week, maybe.
We'll see you after Sean White's next strikeout.
Oh, no. Hunger strike.
All right. Bye, everyone.